in a display of hubris that makes me roar with laughter now. I actually asked the company to fly in the great Austrian conductor, Carlos Kleiber, whose recording of Beethoven's 7th I admired greatly, to conduct the premiere. And NYCB was so willing to cater to my whims, again those unlimited resources, they actually made some inquiries with the famously elusive conductor. I could go on citing the petty misjudgments I made during this project, but you get the idea. When the ballet, called the Beethoven 7th, premiered in January 2000, the response from audience and critics was respectful and in some cases quite warm. But it's not my favorite work, or my best work, and I'll never be able to think about it without remembering the pains of the process. Considering that I went into the project hoping to make my mark in the annals of this historic company, I would have to say that I came up far short of my ambitions. This story could be taught at Harvard Business School as a case study. An executive gets a promotion to run a major division in a corporation. The company gives him a blank check to shake things up, and the new boss responds by A, announcing unrealistic goals, B, tackling the wrong problem out of the gate, C, enlisting all the talented people he can find but assigning tasks that are not quite right for the people doing them, D, changing his mind midstream, and E, assuming he knows the only way to do things. A perfect plan for disaster. 6 weeks later, I was across the Lincoln Center Plaza at American Ballet Theater to make a new ballet, my 15th for the company. The circumstances were ideally horrible. It was as if ABT management had decided to give me the opposite of City Ballet's carte blanche. ABT was giving me 2 weeks to mount a ballet from start to finish, an almost impossible schedule. The budget was minimal. Other than the 2 weeks, I had no fixed rehearsal times. If I wanted to use any of the principal dancers, I would have to catch them on the run between other rehearsals and performances. The whole ballet would have to be spaced on stage, properly lit, and costumed in 90 minutes of technical rehearsal the afternoon of the world premiere. That day would also be the first time we would work with a live orchestra. Talk about limited resources! In hindsight, it was an ideal situation for me. With a constricted timetable, bare-bones budget, and dancers I couldn't count on to be at my beck and call, I responded accordingly. The circumstances demanded total self-reliance and exquisite planning. The process that resulted in the ballet, the Brahms Haydn Variations, was, to my mind, a model of proper planning. After my recent City Ballet experience, I had no delusions of grandeur. I also knew my materials well, the dancers I would be using, and how much time I would have to rehearse. I made a virtue of the clock ticking. You can't overthink when you don't have time to think at all. I consider this piece the most satisfying ballet of my career. The conditions were so limited that, as Samuel Johnson said about the prospect of being hanged, they concentrated the mind wonderfully. Exercises. 16. Pick a fight. Too much planning implies you've got it all under control. That's boring, unrealistic, and dangerous. It lulls you into a complacency that removes one of the artist's most valuable conditions, being pissed. Art is competitive with yourself, with the past, with the future. It is a special war zone, where first you make the rules, and then you test the consequences. Creativity is an act of defiance. You're challenging the status quo, you're questioning accepted truths and principles. You're asking three universal questions that mock conventional wisdom. Why do I have to obey the rules? Why can't I be different? Why can't I do it my way? These are the impulses that guide all creative people, whether they admit it or not. Every act of creation is also an act of destruction or abandonment. Something has to be cast aside to make way for the new. But those lofty goals are the farthest thing from your mind at the start of a project. In those moments, you need to channel your innate defiance productively. So pick a fight with the system, the rules, your rituals, even your everyday routines. For one day, be completely contrary, to the point of orneriness and belligerence, with anything and everything you do. Turn everything upside down. When you get up in the morning, pick a fight with your wake-up routine. If you like to exercise, as I do, do your workout in reverse, or twice as fast, phew, or twice as slow, ugh. The chance will challenge your muscles. The discomfort will stimulate your brain. When you set up to work, pick a fight with your rituals. Ask yourself why you need this ritual. What solace and protection does it bring? What state of mind does it create? What good does it produce? Questioning what's gone unquestioned gets the brain humming. When you actually get down to work, pick a fight with your first impulse that day. Do the opposite of what your brain is telling you to do. That quick jolt of defiance might be enough to rewire your circuitry and deliver something new to your doorstep. These are private exercises. You're picking a fight with yourself to generate anger, emotion, combustion, and heat. You need to do this once in a while, if only to prepare yourself for the bigger battle, the one where you pick a fight with something outside yourself. Sometimes the most creative thing you can do in business is to pick a fight with the entrenched systems and hierarchies, if only to get people questioning the wisdom of doing things the same old way. I can't imagine any CEO taking over a company nowadays and telling his new subordinates, "Everything's fine. If it ain't broke, don't fix it." The smart CEOs come in swinging. They install their own team, establish new goals. In other words, they pick fights and start breaking things immediately. Beethoven, the most truculent of artists, not only picked fights with musical forms, reinventing our notions of the shape and scope of symphonies and sonatas, he reinvented how society regarded composers and musicians. Before Beethoven, composers were treated like skilled servants. They were paid whatever their rich and royal patrons wanted to pay. Beethoven changed all that. He demanded and got lucrative fees for his services. And what